with a couple of well-worn stories, old classics. Everything's going green these days, and I'm proud to say I'm a green preacher. I believe in recycling, especially good stories. The first one, maybe you remember, of the professor who worked at a local community college in the psychology department. He was known to give unsolicited sermons on child rearing to all of his neighbors, explaining to them, "You've got to love kids. Love, love, love," he would go on. "Never get impatient with a child, never spank a kid, but you've got to love them." One afternoon, he was standing at a distance from his driveway. He had poured a cement slab there that day, just admiring his handiwork, when out of the bushes bolted this little child from the neighborhood, running across his wet cement on the driveway, leaving deep indentations in the cement. Well, the professor went ballistic. "You good for nothing little, what do you think you're doing, you tramp?" And just then, a neighbor pops up from behind the fence. He says, "Ah, professor, you gotta love that kid. Love, love, love." To which the professor replied, "Well, I do love that kid in the abstract, but not in the concrete." It's easy to love in the abstract. But tonight, I want to just get painstakingly practical and think with you, how do we love in concrete ways? As I mentioned last night, I love the theme of our week together, reflecting His love. But notice, there's an important word that's not in that phrase. Our theme is not reflecting on His love, although that would be a worthwhile endeavor indeed. It's not reflecting about His love. No, what we've gathered to be about together this week is around the theme, reflecting His love. Actually, loving like Jesus would love. Not in abstract ways, but in concrete ways. So, how do we do that? Well, last night we surveyed the writings of Solomon and sort of took a sweeping overview of some of his wisdom. Tonight, we'll take a similar approach to the writings of James. James, of course, the one who calls us to be not just hearers of the word, although that's good, but be what? Doers of the word. So, how can we be doers of the word? By reflecting God's love. Let me give you four themes through the book of James. It helps us to understand how we can reflect God's love. First, James would tell us, reflect God's love through your eyes. This might be simply referred to as the ministry of noticing. Listen to the words of James, chapter 2, verses 15 and 16. He says, "Just suppose a brother or a sister is without clothes and daily food. If one of you says to him, 'Go, I wish you well, keep warm and well fed,' but does nothing about his physical needs, what good is it?" Can you imagine actually saying that to somebody? You see him naked and hungry and saying, "Hey, nice threads. You want to watch me eat Krispy Kreme donuts?" Who would do that? And that's the question that James puts to us here. What good is that? No, he says, be a doer of the word by noticing, by seeing opportunities to reflect God's love. Notice. I received a letter from my conference president some years ago where it simply said, "I noticed. Dear Carl," he wrote, "I noticed that things are going well in your church. I noticed an article that you had published in such and such a magazine. Just wanted to say thank you. P.S. Enclosed, you will find a very small portion of my appreciation." And sure enough, looked in the envelope, he had included this crisp $5 bill. Isn't that a classy gesture? Not a lot of money, but imagine if all of you were to notice what I do. A nice way to reflect God's love, wouldn't it? I'm kidding. Don't send me money. You know, unless like you're really spiritual or something like that, then who am I to squelch the work of the Spirit? Well, see, we can start practicing this ministry of noticing today, tonight. We don't have to wait until after camp meeting is over, because we're not here to just reflect on God's love. We're here to start reflecting God's love. So you can notice. I noticed that you were yawning and just want to know, are you out of stress these days? How are you doing? Or to go up to a child, I notice what makes your eyes just dance with joy. I noticed. Reflect God's love through your eyes. Next, James would say, through your mouth, through your tongue, through what you say. This might be simply called the ministry of blessing. Notice, he says, my dear brothers, if anyone considers himself righteous and yet does not keep a tight rein on his tongue, he deceives himself, and his religion is worthless. Have you ever thought about the power of your words? Your words can be very destructive, and James gives us examples of this. He says, your tongue, it's like the bit in the horse of a mouth, a small bit that controls this very powerful animal. Your tongue, it's like this spark that can destroy thousands of acres in a forest fire. Your tongue, it's like this rudder on the back of this huge ship, but it guides the ship. That's the power of the ministry of blessing. You can reflect God's love by what you say, the words you choose to either build up or to destroy. Jane Van Loren understands this. She's a research director in Seattle, Washington. She writes her story, when I was 13, I figured it would be easier to just drop dead. I didn't know I had hit the customary angst of puberty. I thought that it was just me. Growing up in a family was just like sharing a hotel with a few other guests that you only saw at meals. My businessman father didn't have much interest in kids. He wanted to wait to see if we ever amounted to anything first. My attractive mother and her wardrobe lived in a social whirl. My older brother had his own life, so I hid out in my room and I just read books. In eighth grade, what I had, brains, grades, leadership skills, didn't count anymore. Looks did. Now, I was just a skinny kid with braces, zits, and straight hair. A true, plain Jane. My family's word for me was homely, and they said it a lot. She's writing this now, 45 years later, and yet she can still remember the sting of that one word that she was called a lot, homely. Ah, but Jane remembers when she was in eighth grade going to a concert by the world-renowned pianist Roger Williams and listening to his music. She remembers everybody in the audience that night being mesmerized as he played the piano. After he finished the concert, she said, people rushed toward the stage, forming a long line, everybody hoping to get a handshake, get an autograph. And so she fell into the back of the line, and she waited for 2 hours before she finally got into the presence of this great pianist. She remembers it like this. He said to me, well, hello, pretty girl. I was stunned. No one had ever called me a pretty girl before. My mouth must have fallen open because he laughed and said, "Yes, I do mean you, really." Then with tears rushing to my eyes, I watched him sign my wadded up program and then turn to greet others. That night I went home, locked myself into the bathroom, and stared at myself in the mirror for a long time. I practiced my smile and whispered the words to myself very softly over and over again. "Well, hello, pretty girl." 45 years later, still remembers the power of those words. Now, since we're here together this week, in a quest to truly reflect the love of God, perhaps you could say a few words to a young person around campus, or maybe to an elderly person, to somebody. You could say words that 45 years from now, they will still remember. That's the power of your words. So reflect God's love through your eyes, through your mouth, through your ears, James says. My dear brothers, chapter 1, verse 19, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. Be quick to listen, he says. Now, when James calls us to listen, he's not just talking about hearing auditory sounds. Much more than that. He's calling us to actually crawl into the skin of another individual. He's saying, empathize with them. Try to understand what they're going through. And when you do this, you reflect the love of God. Marion Runge once wrote a poem that I think James would really like. She writes, "If I could have one wish, only a temporary one, I would wish for a fruit basket upset of skin color and nationalities. Let those who poke fun at ethnics feel the hurt of Polish jokes, black jokes, whitey jibes, slanty-eyed stories, and jokes about Jews. Let them be outcasts because they are different. And then, when they return to their original color and nationality, they will express only kindness. If I could have a wish, just a temporary one, I would wish all skinny people to grow fat. Uncomfortably so. Gaining day after day, fighting back the tears as the pounds count up. Let them diet on rabbit food, low carbohydrates, banana milk, egg, grapefruit, or liquid diets. Let them leave the table with stomachs growling while others eat chocolate pie. Let them feel the hurt of mockery, snide remarks, fat jokes, laughter, and ridicule. Let them feel depressed as they lose 1 pound and gain 2 the next day. Let them feel helpless, hopeless, unloved, and unwanted as they go through life. Then, when they return to their normal self, they will be more sensitive to those who cry out inside. If I could have one wish, just a temporary wish, I would wish all beautiful people to turn ugly. Let them cry as they look in a mirror and see freak marks of sin, ugly burns, moles, and disfigurement. Let people stare and snicker at them. Let them be left out of circles of friends, unwanted by the opposite sex. Let them feel loneliness, and then when they are beautiful again, they will be less vain. If I could have another wish, only a temporary one, I would turn the clock ahead for young people and make them old. Let them hobble because of stiff joints. Let them walk a little slower and eat a little longer. Let them be lonely and shut in from the world, especially on holidays. Let them have only memories but no love. Let them be frightened by young prowlers, beaten by young thieves. And then when they are young again, they will be more considerate of senior citizens. If I could have one wish, a permanent one, I would wish that everyone would practice the ministry of empathy. And then we would truly experience earth, life on earth, just as it is in heaven. You can start practicing the ministry of empathy tonight. Maybe if you swing into a mini-mart and quickly ask for directions from the gentleman running the cash register. And you notice that he is somebody that doesn't speak very good English. He's from Iran or Iraq or one of those countries that we hear about a lot on the evening news. And you're very frustrated because he doesn't have a ready answer for you. He doesn't have directions for you. And normally, you might think some real bad thoughts about this kid, but not tonight. Maybe tonight you'd try to crawl into his skin and wonder, what's it like to be in a foreign country where there is blatant racism leveled against you every day? What's it like maybe to be working the midnight shift for minimum wage? Perhaps just trying to scrape together enough money to keep the kids alive, to just survive? What's it like to have impatient customers frustrated because you can't help them? And rather than feeling frustrated, maybe you can feel waves of empathy. And you can use that opportunity to reflect the love of God. Maybe go get him a gift certificate at Starbucks and come back and say, when your shift's over, maybe go have a cup of hot drink on me. See, we have so many opportunities if we just open our eyes to reflect the love of God. One more way, and that is through the ministry of serving. We can reflect God's love through our hands, through action. Again, this is a favorite theme that James keeps coming back to, chapter 1, verse 27. Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this: to look after orphans and widows in their distress. You and I can use our hands to serve people. And in serving, we reflect the love of our God. Here a few months ago, my 14-year-old daughter, Lindsay, went to this conference, a youth specialties convention. She came home all inspired because she heard one young lady from New York City share her testimony. My daughter came home and she said, "Dad, did you know that there are kids in the Bronx who are homeless and hungry?" This testimony she heard from the young woman, that was her story. She grew up on the streets of the Bronx. And so Lindsay was very inspired. She said, "Dad, we got to do something, don't you think?" And in my patronizing, fatherly way, I said, "Yeah, that would be really good." And she said, "Yeah. Maybe spring break, we ought to go on a mission trip to serve the kids in the Bronx, because did you know there's hungry, homeless kids in New York City? We should do something about that." I didn't think about it till a couple of weeks later. People in my church came to me and said, in passing, "By the way, you going with us on our mission trip to New York City this spring break? Come again?" "Yeah, we're going to go on a mission trip to New York City. You didn't know? There's hungry, homeless kids in the Bronx. Don't you think we ought to do something about that? I said, well, who's going? Lindsay hasn't talked to you about it? Well, I raced home, cornered my kid and said, Lindsay, let's not be reckless here. Hey, I got people in the church talking about going on spring break for a mission trip, and you're organizing this whole thing? Well, yeah. There's hungry, homeless kids we ought to go help. Well, Lindsay, where are we going to stay? And who's going to pay for this? And how are we going to get there? And do you know any of this? No, but God will take care of that, won't He? Isn't that what you preach about? I hate that. She starts preaching my sermons to me. That's not right. I said, well, it's expensive. How many people are going? I don't know. I'm thinking 30. And where are we going to stay? On the streets? Yeah, maybe. I don't know. So we had one of those, you know, daddy to daughter come to Jesus talks. I said, Lindsay, you got to rein this thing in. You got to say, you can't just be going around talking to people in the church. I said, well, sorry, Dad, but I think that's what we ought to do. Next day, I went to the office, ran into some more members. Oh, hey, Pastor. Hey, you going to go with us to New York City spring break? That weekend, ironically enough, I went to Northern California, a small church, to speak for the weekend. When I got there, this elder of the church handed me an envelope, and I could see there was a check inside. Oh, this never really happened to me before. I said, well, what is this? He said, oh, that's not an honorarium. We don't pay honorariums. I said, well, yeah, that's fine. I didn't expect one or ask for any honorarium. He says, we just felt impressed to give you this check under the stipulation that it goes for some kind of mission trip. We don't care what mission trip or where you're going or when you use it, just so long as you use it to, you know, serve people. So, well, thank you. Opened up the envelope and I just gasped because it was a lot of money. More money than I had ever seen for speaking at a weekend thing. And I said, wow, that will send a lot of people to New York City. I got home, I shared the good news with Lindsay. I just got this check, and she was ecstatic, although not that surprised. She said, I knew God would take care of it. You knew that too, didn't you, Dad? I wondered if maybe she called the church ahead of me, posing as my agent, and asked, you do understand Elder Hafner's speaking fee and his arrangements, right? Just wanted to make sure as his agent that you were on board. I don't think she did that, but frankly, I'm afraid to ask her point blank. Because that would be very embarrassing. All I know is they gave me a check for thousands of dollars. I said, well, I guess we're going to New York City over spring break. Oh, that'll be great. We had to limit it to 30 people. Then people started calling. Well, how come I can't get in? I'm sorry. I'd say, you're too late. You got to jump on it. But we really wanted to go because there's hungry, homeless kids in the Bronx. And so just last month, we drove to New York City, about 30 of us. We slept on a cold gym floor in a place where they had no hot water at all. We took freezing cold showers all week. Spent the days right in the heart of the Bronx, serving at a Latino community center, helping the homeless, serving meals to the homeless at the Love Kitchen right there in the Bronx, volunteering at a daycare center that cared for hungry, homeless kids. And it was just the best week of my life. All because of a 14-year-old who wanted to reflect God's love in a tangible way. Do you know there are hungry, homeless kids in the Bronx? Did you know there are hungry, homeless people in Charlotte, Asheville? There's no shortage of need. Opportunities are all around us. And I'm telling you, friends, a 14-year-old kid can use her hands to serve people. Surely you can. Surely I can, don't you think? She's just reflecting God's love in a tangible way. James calls us to be doers of the word. Don't just come together for a wonderful convocation to reflect on God's love, but be doers of the word. And at the heart of what it means to be a Christian, Jesus said it clearly, John 13, this is how people will know that you are a genuine disciple of mine. They love one another. Reflect God's love with your hands, with your mouth, with your eyes, with your ears. Reflect God's love. Be a doer of His word. Some years ago, I was in New York City. Opening that weekend, just off Broadway, was a play called Tuesdays with Maury. You've probably read the book. I had read it through a couple of times, and so I was anxious to see the stage adaptation of the book. The story, of course, is of that of an up-and-coming sports reporter who lived in Detroit when he saw a former professor from college being interviewed by Ted Koppel on Nightline. His professor's claim to fame was simply that he was dying of Lou Gehrig's disease, but he was dying with dignity, thus making his story newsworthy. Well, this young sports reporter, Mitch Albom, decided to reconnect with this professor, Maury. And every Tuesday, he would fly to Boston and sit by the bedside of this dying old man. And he took notes because this man had so much wisdom, which we talked about last night, just wisdom on how to live. Early on, during the performance, my buddy leaned over and said, "What is that squealing sound?" We were sitting on the front row of the balcony. The sound seemed like it was directly below us, but it was hard to tell. I said, "It must be the PA feedback or something. I don't know," but it was somewhat irritating. Suddenly, the actor portraying this young sports writer, Mitch Albom, he broke character. At first, of course, I just thought it was all part of the play, but it wasn't. He just broke character and erupted. Glancing our direction, directly under us, he said, "Would you mind? We're trying to do a play here." Suddenly, all the house lights came on. You could hear the woman in the sound booth scrambling for a microphone, and then you heard her anxious voice saying, "Ladies and gentlemen, we have a slight interruption, but we will resume the play, Tuesdays with Maury, momentarily. We just ask that you remain seated, and please be patient." Now, we were all eavesdropping on a conversation between a security guard and an elderly woman sitting in her chair. The security guard insisting, "Ma'am, you're going to have to leave because people are complaining about your ringing hearing aid. Please, would you remove yourself from the auditorium?" The lady just sat there like a statue. She said, "No, I'm not moving." But you have to move. You're going to have to leave. I paid for this seat. I've got a ticket. I'm not going anywhere. Now, the guard started to forcefully remove her from the chair. She yanked her arm away from his and said, I will sue you, you blankety blank blank. Don't you touch me. By now, people in the audience started to yell slanderous, angry words toward her. Yeah, get out of here, lady, somebody said. Thick Brooklyn accent, you know. Well, this went on for a couple of minutes, very awkward, until finally this woman consented. She said, fine, okay, I will leave, but don't you touch me. Slowly, ever so slowly, she stood to her feet. She started walking towards it. And as she did, everybody applauded and cheered and whistled. And finally, she had left the auditorium, and the woman announced, and now we will resume with the play Tuesdays with Maury, which, of course, is about a play about a dying old man who is losing his biological functions, and yet this sports reporter keeps telling him, but still, even though you have... You know, you're losing your functions. You're a valuable human being, and you have so much to teach us. They concluded to a standing ovation. People excitedly cheered and clapped. Everybody, so far as I could tell, was standing on their feet. Everybody except me. I just sat there, reeling over the irony of this whole deal. Here we had just sat for 90 minutes and watched a moving play about an old man who's losing his biological functions. But then, when we had the perfect opportunity to put that play into practice and actually treat a woman who was losing the biological function of her hearing, when we had an opportunity to treat her with some kind of dignity, we just failed. Which made me believe, at the end of the day, it was just a really good act. That's all it was. It was a good play. They recited their lines perfectly with good inflection. It was a good performance. But that's all it was. Just a good performance. Because when we had the perfect opportunity to put the act into action, we just missed it. Well, I'm no actor. I'm not just reciting lines. I really believe that tonight we have encountered the Word of the living God, who calls us not to reflect about His love, but calls us to reflect His love. But our time together is useless and wasted unless we take the Word of God and we become doers of the Word, and we actually go from this place tonight and we love. If you need a snapshot of love, the most compelling picture I know of, just you look at the cross. Greater love has no one than this, that He should lay down His life. That's our Jesus. You just live in the shadow of the cross. And you keep your gaze focused on Jesus, dying on the cross at Calvary. And as you do, He will then empower you by His Spirit to go and reflect Calvary's love. In the back, just before we came out here, several of the students from Mount Pisgah all saw tucked in my Bible this book, and they all asked me excitedly together, is that I'll Love You Forever? I promised we would sandwich this study by two well-known stories Well, you've probably read this book to your grandkids or maybe to your kids. All of the kids in the back were excited about the story. I said, did your parents read? Oh, every night my mom would read me that story. I love this story. In fact, they started begging me, please, just read it. Read it to us right now. Please, Uncle Carl, read it. And they didn't call me Uncle Carl, but they did want me to read the story. And I said, you got to stay through that long, boring message. And then at the end, I'll read it to you. And if you want, you can come forward here and sit on the floor. And you don't have to do that. But it's just a great little story. A mother held her new baby and very slowly rocked him back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. While she held him, she sang, I'll love you forever, I'll like you for always. As long as I'm living, my baby, you'll be. That baby grew. He grew and he grew and he grew. He grew until he was 2 years old and he ran all around the house. He pulled all the books off the shelves. He pulled all the food out of the refrigerator and took his mother's watch and flushed it down the toilet. Sometimes his mother would say, this kid is driving me crazy. But at night, when that two-year-old was quiet, she opened the door to his room, crawled across the floor, looked up over the side of his bed, and if he was really asleep, she picked him up and rocked him back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. While she rocked him, she sang, I'll love you forever, I'll like you for always. As long as I'm living, my baby you'll be. That little boy grew. He grew and he grew and he grew. He grew until he was 9 years old and he never wanted to come in for dinner. He never wanted to take a bath. And when grandma visited, he always said bad words. Sometimes his mother wanted to sell him to the zoo. But at nighttime, when he was asleep, the mother quietly opened the door to his room, crawled across the floor, and looked up over the side of the bed. If he was really asleep, she picked up that 9-year-old boy and rocked him back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And while she rocked him, she sang, I'll love you forever. I'll like you for always. As long as I'm living, my baby, you'll be. The boy grew. He grew and he grew and he grew. He grew until he was a teenager. He had strange friends and he wore strange clothes and he listened to strange music. Sometimes the mother felt like she was in a zoo. But at nighttime, when that teenager was asleep, the mother opened the door to his room and crawled across the floor and looked up over the side of the bed. If he was really asleep, she picked up that great big boy and rocked him back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And while she rocked him, she sang, I'll love you forever, I'll like you for always. As long as I'm living, my baby, you'll be. A teenager grew, he grew and he grew and he grew. He grew until he was a grown-up man. He left home and got a house across town. But sometimes on dark nights, the mother got into her car and drove across town. If all the lights in her son's house were out, she opened his bedroom window, crawled across the floor, looked up over the side of his bed. If that great big man was really asleep, she picked him up and rocked him back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And while she rocked him, she sang, I'll love you forever. I'll like you for always. As long as I'm living, my baby, you'll be. Well, that mother, she got older. She got older and older and older. One day she called up her son and said, you'd better come to see me because I'm very old and sick. So her son came to see her. When he came in the door, she tried to sing the song. She sang, I'll love you forever. I'll like you for always. But she couldn't finish because she was too old and sick.
So the son went to his mother. He picked her up, rocked her back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And he sang this song, "I'll love you forever. I'll like you for always. As long as I'm living, my mommy, you'll be." When the son came home that night, he stood for a long time at the top of the stairs. And then he went into the room where his very new baby daughter was sleeping. And he picked her up in his arms and very slowly rocked her back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And while he rocked her, he sang, "I'll love you forever. I'll like you for always. As long as I'm living, my baby, you'll be." It is the song of Calvary, where God Himself says to you, "I'll love you forever. I'll like you for always. As long as you're living, my child, you'll be." So revel in the glory of His grace and go now and sing that song. Reflect His love. Father, we are so grateful for the cross, for your unconditional love that embraces us no matter where we've been or what we've done. The outstretched arms of Calvary call us home. And for that unconditional love, God, we just collectively say, thank you. And now we ask by your Spirit that we would be vessels, channels of your grace, so that we might go and love likewise. In the name of your Son, Jesus Christ, amen.